Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-Hour Home Care. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pop Health Podcast. My name is Gavin Ward, and I'm the host of Pop Health Podcast. And today we are up in San Francisco. Lovely weather outside today. Hard to find parking, but we did find a good spot here by the Region 9 Federal Building. And it's the Region 9 for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And we have our returning guest, David Sion. David, welcome.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Thanks so much again for joining us today. A little change of venue versus last time when you joined us on vacation from the other side of the bay. At your lovely home there in the East Bay. Thanks again for coming a second time. Joe Zimmer is our co-host today. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you, Gavin. Good morning, David. Great to see you again. David, when we last spoke, actually, you mentioned your love of music. I'm a music lover as well. Has your band had any recent performances? How have things been going with that?
Well, actually, Sunday night we played an 80th birthday party for a friend of mine who's a retired physician, and we all had a mighty good time out in Sacramento.
Wonderful. Wow. Awesome. That's a little bit of a commute. We're actually heading over there this afternoon for another recording with the Home Care Services Bureau. So two recordings today. We're very grateful again, David, for you joining us. Also, before we get into kind of the business side, I did see a Warriors little logo over there. How are the Warriors doing?
Well, I think they're 50-4, if I'm not mistaken, or 50-6 or something like that. But I know the 5-0 is a big number, and we're on our way to another championship.
Oh, them fighting words. I'm from L.A., so although I don't think the Lakers are even going to even have a shot. The Clippers might. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, the Clippers gave them a good fight this past weekend, but the Warriors pulled it off. So, David, let's talk a little bit about bundled payments and what some folks refer to as the BPCI program. You guys have been pretty proactive with this here at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to find ways to reduce healthcare costs and also improving the care for beneficiaries. Can you tell us a little bit about the BPCI program, which began in late 2013?
Well, yes. It's still fairly new, although 2013 is certainly a while ago. We don't have a lot of data that we've analyzed so far.
Okay. Sorry, please continue.
This bundled payment program is really part of our broader effort to overhaul the way we pay providers of medical care and move away from the traditional fee-for-service model. There are other alternative payment models like accountable care and medical homes. And in fact, last year, the Secretary proposed a goal of having 50% of Medicare payments tied to quality or value-based payment models by 2018.
Oh, wow.
Now, David, I know you mentioned there's not a ton of data yet, but have you reached any conclusions at this point on the effectiveness of BPCI so far?
Well, one of the things we're doing with the Innovation Center generally is to speed up the pace of testing and implementing new approaches. So with this particular project, there's going to be, or there has been, an annual analysis of the program by the Lewin Group. And so for that first year analysis that they did, they looked at three of the four bundled payment models. Under each, an episode of care is defined as an inpatient hospitalization for one of 48 eligible clinical episodes. And the initial participants, either hospitals or physician groups, began in 2013 with 15 awardees. So in the model that's called Model 2, they did find some initial evidence that the participating providers might be reducing costs. Those providers were less likely to refer patients to skilled nursing facilities and more likely to rely on home health, in fact, which is a more reasonable cost approach for taking care of people after the hospital. They also found that the inpatient stay was shorter and the likelihood of being readmitted after 30 days went down. The most common clinical episode that we saw in bundled payments was actually joint replacement. Okay. About 40% of the procedures during the first two quarters that the program was in place. We're also seeing initiatives around congestive heart failure, pulmonary disease, and pneumonia.
That sounds very encouraging, David. Are more providers signing up for the bundled payments initiative?
Well, as of just this past month, we're up to 1,600 participants, 409 acute care hospitals, 700 skilled nursing providers, and 100 home health agencies.
Wow, that is a lot of folks signing up. We were actually just at a conference in Arizona yesterday where the BPCI program was talked about quite a bit and some of the success stories as well. I know you oversee activity in both that state and here in California. It's also Puerto Rico, too. Is that correct, David? Do you cover forgive me, Region 9? Okay. So, David, what initiatives are being discussed on a legislative level that CMS might see coming to fruition in the near future?
Well, I always open by saying that we don't have a crystal ball here. We know that there's talk of an alternative to the Affordable Care Act, but we haven't seen that yet. But there is a legislative initiative that's already happened, and that's the Merit-Based Incentive Payment System, or MIPS, which will replace the existing CMS programs that were designed to measure and pay for quality services by physicians and other practitioners, and that'll help us move toward this goal of tying payments to quality or value.
It's funny you mentioned MIPS. I worked for an organization right out of college, and the MIPS for them was an instant pay system, IPS. So it's funny that you bring that up, but now I have to redefine it. So how does the MIPS program actually work?
Well, what the law calls for is a program to assign providers scores based on their quality of service, their efficient use of resources, their efforts to do clinical practice improvement, and their meaningful use of electronic medical records. And based upon that score, eligible providers may see their pay adjusted upward, downward, or not at all. The maximum payment adjustment starts at 4% in 2019 and goes all the way to 9% in 2022 and beyond. And there will be additional payment adjustment given for providers who perform exceptionally well.
Now, on that note, David, will the public be able to see the scores of their own doctors and other providers through the system?
I'm glad you asked that question. Transparency, the ability for people to understand what's really going on in their medical care is one of the things that we really support. And this law requires that we publish this performance information on our Physician Compare website.
Awesome. I know data is super important for the public to see. At that conference I mentioned yesterday, that was a big topic as well, just seeing those scores. Moving on to kind of innovation, one of the neat things that I really appreciate about CMS is the openness to innovation and awarding grants and things like that to improve our outcomes with patients. So the CMS Innovation Center allows some organizations to branch out and be forward-thinking. Tell us a little bit about maybe some of the success stories you've seen out there, David.
Well, sure. The first example that comes to mind is what we call accountable care or accountable care organizations.
Okay.
These are groups of doctors and hospitals and other providers who come together voluntarily to give coordinated, high-quality care to their Medicare patients. The goal of coordinated care, of course, is to ensure that patients, especially chronically ill patients, get the right care at the right time and avoiding unnecessary duplication of services and, of course, preventing errors. And when one of these ACOs succeeds in delivering high-quality care and spending dollars wisely, it shares in the savings that it achieves for the Medicare program. We've seen results suggesting that these accountable care organizations are delivering higher quality care to more and more Medicare beneficiaries every year. In fact, in 2014, the 20 Pioneer ACOs and 333 Shared Savings ACOs generated more than $411 million in total savings. And at the same time, 97 of those ACOs qualified for shared savings payments of more than $422 million by meeting quality standards and their savings threshold. These results show that ACOs with more experience in the program tend to perform better over time.
Thanks for sharing that information on ACOs, David. I know that Gavin and I have attended a lot of conferences and summits regarding the wonderful work some of the ACOs are doing here in California, and it's great to hear a little bit more about the success. Any other examples that you can speak on?
Well, sure. Another place where we're making some progress is dealing with what we call dual eligibles, people who have Medicare benefits and also have benefits under Medicaid or Medi-Cal here in California. Under the Affordable Care Act, we're partnering with California and several other states to look for ways to improve coordination of care for that population. Here in California, the program is called CalMediConnect. We recently did an evaluation that praised this program for the strength of its stakeholder engagement process, as well as the strength and independence of its ombudsman program. That ombudsman program expanded its tasks beyond complaints and advocacy to include beneficiary counseling after it was inundated with calls on the basic questions about the demonstration. California was also recognized for its commitment to continually examining and trying to improve the program, as evidenced by the significant research underway thanks to the SCAN Foundation.
It's funny you mentioned the SCAN Foundation. I drive past the SCAN building quite regularly on the 405, and we do some work with them as well and have some friends over there. I know they've been pretty innovative in the past and willing to take on some new things, including some social efforts that aren't necessarily considered part of the medical world. Let's speaking of kind of the non-medical world, what are your thoughts on Medicare funding maybe more non-medical approaches or programs such as assisted living or non-medical home care and maybe some of those other social supports?
Well, you know, one of the things that we're working on is trying to figure out an intelligent way to make payments adjusted with some sensitivity for social or other factors that might impact health. And so to learn more about how that works, we've developed a program that we call the Accountable Health Community Model. The idea here is to advance our three-point aim of better care, smarter spending, and healthier people through broad improvements in the healthcare system.
David, what is the Accountable Health Community?
Well, understanding that a large driver of healthcare costs is things that fall outside the environment of clinical care. There's emerging evidence that addressing health-related social needs through better clinical and community linkages could improve health outcomes and reduce costs. So this is a five-year program that will test whether identifying and addressing the health-related social needs of Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries can affect healthcare quality, utilization, and costs. What makes this model unique is it's the first to look at health-related social needs of our beneficiaries and address the gaps between care delivery and community services.
And what are those health-related social needs that will be identified and addressed by this particular model?
Well, again, we're focusing on those things that evidence suggests might affect healthcare utilization and cost. So we're going to look at what we call core needs and supplemental needs. Core needs are things like housing, food, utilities, interpersonal violence, and transportation. And these are things we expect all the grantees in this program to systematically identify and address in their communities. The supplemental needs include family and social supports, education, employment, and income and health behaviors.
It definitely sounds like it'll be addressing a lot of important needs here in the communities. How will specifically the model work?
Well, first, Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries will be screened to identify their health-related social needs. Next, we would test the effectiveness of referrals to increase beneficiary awareness of community services, and then testing how well beneficiaries are able to navigate and access those services. The key innovation here is partner alignment at the community level, which makes this a really community-driven model.
Awesome. One of the things that really stood out, David, you mentioned about 2 minutes ago, is housing and how housing can be really impactful to someone's healthcare, which I know I didn't think too much about in the past. Recently, we were speaking with someone from a group called Northern Arizona Healthcare, and they used the term housing is healthcare. I never thought of it that way, but it makes perfect sense. So I'm glad CMS is looking at it as a potential key to improving outcomes. Can you tell a little bit more about how the Accountable Health Communities program is structured?
Sure. The grantees will be called bridge organizations for purpose of this project, and they'll serve as a kind of a hub. They'll be responsible for coordinating efforts to identify and partner with clinical delivery sites. They'll connect beneficiaries with unmet health-related social needs to community service providers that might be able to address those needs. And finally, the bridge organizations will help to align program partners to optimize the community's capacity to address social needs.
So what are some of the model requirements?
Well, one, of course, is this bridge organization. That's the lead organization that submits the application and has the capacity to develop and maintain relationships with clinical delivery sites and community service providers. Those community service providers will receive referrals and support service realignments. And clinical delivery sites will systematically screen and refer Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries who live in that community. An accountable health community will include at least one hospital, one provider of primary care services, one provider of behavioral health services, and at least one state Medicaid agency. So if there's a community organization out there that's interested in applying, one of each of these will be necessary in order to put together an application that meets our criteria.
Okay, David, and so would they go on the CMS website, on the innovation side, or what would be the best place for them to apply?
That's correct. Innovation.cms.hhs.gov has information about all of these programs.
Okay, great. Well, David, we really appreciate you giving us an update today from the CMS perspective. Where are you off to next? Are you going to be based here in San Francisco for a little bit? Or?
Well, actually, I was supposed to be at that event in Arizona with you yesterday, but other things got in the way. And I think my next trip is down in your neighborhood in the South.
Okay, very good. Well, you'll be coming to the our neck of woods in Southern California. Well, David, again, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been our privilege, and our healthcare audience is really going to benefit from this information. And best wishes on your travels. And to the audience, stay tuned for the next episode of Pop Health Podcast. Joe, thanks for joining us as well.
Great. Thanks, Gavin. Thanks again so much, David, for your time today.
All right.
Thanks, Dave.